the honorable members of the committee back to our work in our committee with our support staff, members of the media, everybody who's on the on the platform, and most and also National Treasury, who's going to be interacting with us today. This is the beginning of the third term. And I dare say that is our last third term in this sixth administration, if you get what I mean. Honorable members, let me check with you, Mashile. Do we have apologies?
Yes, Chair, we do have an apology. Mr. Darren Arense, the committee secretary, is out of the country. He won't be with us for today.
Thank you. Is that the only one?
Yes, that is the only one so far, Chair.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. Let me again welcome National Treasury. They are going to be briefing us on the on the spending outcomes of both the SOCs and the national departments. It's a very important interaction today, because as the committee, we have decided to monitor the spending patterns of the departments and of the SOCs, looking at how they deal with the budget that Parliament appropriates to them. Why do we do that? It's because it's so critical that the money that Parliament appropriates is used and used appropriately and used for the purpose for which it has been appropriated for. That talks to service delivery. Failure to spend money result in service delivery being compromised. Also, we all know that as a country we run a deficit, meaning that we go to the market and borrow the money that we can't raise from our revenues. So if we don't spend that money, it means that we go and borrow money, and it's not used, and then the cost of that money definitely is big. So that becomes a wasteful expenditure, so to speak. But also the opportunity cost of that money are just too high, because departments which don't use money, I'm sure other departments or other SOCs would have used that money much better. So again, that's the reason why we look at that. But even more important is that government expenditure is an important component of aggregate demand, and also an important component of economic growth. So if we don't spend money, we must know that the macro impact of that is that we impact negatively on what we are trying to do with economic growth. And the domino effect continues. It will mean that businesses who are going to get work from departments, they are not going to get that work. It means that SMEs are also being compromised. It means our endeavor to try and de-rationalize the economy by using the budget is also compromised. So that's why the committee has decided that it's going to spend a lot of time on this matter of looking at the government departments and the SOCs, their capacity to spend, and understand exactly why we have under expenditure, whatever we have under expenditure. And two, but even most important, what interventions are being made to try and correct that. With those a few words, I take it is Dr. Mampo and your team. You are welcome. Please take us through your presentation. Maximum 1 hour. Thank you very much. National Treasury. Mashile?
Yes, I've made Dr. Mampo a co-host. Let me just check with her as well. She's a co-host.
She has gone awol. Dr. Mampo has gone awol. You are muted. You are muted, Dr. Mampo.
Let me also check.
Dr. Mampo, winning. You are muted. You're muted, Mashile, please help. Okay, unmute.
Yes.
Dr. Mapo, unmute. I can see you're muted.
Yeah, you can try, Dr. Try, Dr. Mapo. Still.
Well, I see Darren has joined us. Good morning, Darren. I know you are on your way out, as one can see in that rugby ball, to the city of love, to Paris. Enjoy, and you must come back with the trophy. I can see we are now having your slide lighted, but you still can't hear you, Dr. Mamba. Let's try to deal with that.
I've unmuted Dr. Mampo. I'm not really sure. Can you try, Dr. Mampo? Can you hear me? But we can't hear you, Ed.
Okay, let's try that one. Let's just give them a few minutes to try and sort that one out. That's what always happens with technology, especially after a long break, eh? Okay, take your time. Or do you want to go out, Dr. Mampo, and come back again and see what happens? Let me check with the rest. Robert Kaiso, can you say something? I just want to see whether we can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you, Chair.
Okay, good. Okay, good morning. How are you, Robert Kaiso?
I'm fine. How are you, Chair?
Perfect. Thank you. Makakula, are you there? Honorable Sarupen, how are you doing?
I'm good in yourself, Chairperson.
Good, thank you. Honorable Maria, good.
I'm around. It's a lovely day outside, and welcome to everybody back. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. As you can see, I was struggling with Dr. Mampo, but I'm sure they'll put it out.
Good morning, Chairperson. I think I'm just going to join with two devices.
I'm recording in progress.
That's fine. As long as we can hear you and you can see what you are presenting to us, it's perfect. Please continue. Good morning and welcome again. Dr. Mampo?
Chairperson, I think I'm just going to go with both the laptop and my screen. Sorry about this. Hey, I couldn't see, man. I'm fine. It's technology. I'm booming. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Sorry about that. As Chair has introduced me, my name is Mampo Modise, and I have a team from the Treasury. We will take the committee through the first quarter outcomes for 2023-24, and we're going to have a preview on the outcomes of some of the selected public entities on their spending for the rest of the year. So, Chair, let me just share my screen because that makes it a bit easy to work on this. Please allow me to share secretariat. So, Chairperson, I think the first thing that one would want to basically share with the committee is that for the first time in a long time, the underspending that we're seeing or the less than projected expenditure that we see, can the secretariat please allow me to share my slides?
Yes, I'm attending to that. You had the slide earlier on. Let me just try to check this.
So, Chair and Honourable Members, I think for the first time in a long time, the less than projected spending has been the lowest in a couple of years. So basically, the recorded less than projected spending is 8.2 billion, which is 3.2% of the initial projection. So basically, Chairperson, how we decided to would you please allow me? I'm still struggling. Host disabled, participant screen sharing.
Yes, Dr. Mampo, let me share it from this side. I'm struggling as well to let you share the screen. Let me open it up so that you can share it from this side. Is that fine?
It's perfect, Buti. Thank you.
Okay, so.
So, Chairperson, the way in which we thought it would be good to summarize this information is that we went back from 2008, please slide three. We went back from 2018-19, where we looked at the actual expenditure compared to the initial projections. And basically, the way in which we set up the slide is that in 2018-19, this 178 billion is basically the 108 billion that was spent in the first quarter of that year relative to the initial projections, which is 188 billion. And then you look at the spending relative to the projections. So the department...
Sorry, Honorable Chair, may I interrupt, please?
Yes, sir.
We've got a problem. Members can't log in from the lobby. They can't be let in. I don't know what is the problem. The whole four of them.
Let's just hold, Dr. Mampo. Machine, can you please attend to that and let us know once we have accepted everybody?
Yes, at the moment, they don't appear on my screen, but I'll just check and I'll ask my colleague Funeka and Chia So to assist in admitting members, but I'll also check.
Let's just wait because the information that is being shared is very important. Can we try and get the members in, and once they are in, please let me know. Otherwise, it doesn't help for us to talk to ourselves without our members.
Thank you so much.
Then you let me know once we have sorted the time out. Yeah. So come on, then we'll have to start at the beginning.
Yes.
That's fine, Chairperson. We will definitely do that.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I've admitted the Honorable Matafa. Honorable Chair, an update. I'm in contact with the members. Some of them have got a problem. We don't see them in the lobby, but I'm going to ask them to log in again. Just an update. I spoke to Honorable Mezi and Honorable Tobias.
Okay, is Honorable Mlenzana in?
No, he's not yet in. I'm also trying to contact him.
Okay. So, for honorable members, it's definitely a technological glitch. Let's try and see what happens. I'm saying those who are on the platform waiting, my apologies. And those who are struggling to come in, we're attempting to get them in.
Right.
So bear with us, hey?
Good morning, Chairperson. Honorable Matafa here.
Honorable Matafa, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair. My apologies. I'm one of those that were struggling to come in. I've been waiting since 10 minutes before 9.
Okay, welcome.
I'm good. It's Mashile, eh? Yeah, Yeah, we are.
Mashile, mute as you are talking with the oral members. Please mute. Smooth now. Hello, Che. Chairperson? Hello, Che. Yes, Mashile.
Yes, it's been resolved. Honorable Toyawas is in now, and Honorable Matafa is in.
Okay. Being
the ones that were out, yeah.
No, Honorable Lindana was also outstanding, but I think let's continue.
Yeah, I spoke to you. Yes.
Lindana. Okay.
Yes, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm in at last.
Okay. Let me try and just good morning, oral members, and welcome to the oral members who are struggling to log in. Our apologies. It's technology playing around us, but I'm happy that they've all managed to come in. And I don't know what Honorable Sarupen did. It looks like the honorable members of the ANC were locked out in this meeting. Honorable Sarupen, what did you do?
Chair, I deny all responsibility.
Okay. Thank you so much. And thank you to you, honorable members, who are on the platform already. for the patient. Honourable members, we are having National Treasury making a presentation on the first quarter of this year, financial year, fiscal year, it's a financial year, making a presentation on the expenditure, 2023-24 Q1 spending outcomes. So that's what we're busy with. And I said when I was introducing them that it's a very important area that this committee has decided it was going to focus on for a number of reasons, but primary amongst them is that we as Parliament allocate money, appropriate money to different departments and entities so that in expectation of a particular outcomes, mainly service delivered to our people. So failure to do that compromises that objective. Secondly, as a country, we run a deficit, which means that for the difference, we go out to the markets and borrow money. So there's a cost involved with that. I also spoke about the opportunity cost of that money, which is lying on the bank. If it was taken to other departments or entities, it would be spent and spent better. So as this committee, as you know, or members, we have focused on among other things that we make sure that the money is being spent for the purpose that it was appropriated for and spent properly without wasteful, irregular, and fruitless expenditure. So that's where we are, and you are all welcome, and thank you. Thank you so much, honorable members. Dr. Mampo, please start. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I hope, mind you can hear me from my laptop. Am I audible? Very well,
thank you.
Oh, perfect. Now it's working, Gabon. Chair, thank you so much for awarding us the opportunity to do the presentation today. Basically, I'm here with the team. I will try to move fast, Chairperson, but not compromise the presentation itself. Usually when we do the first quarter spending outcomes, we look at the spending compared to the projections that the department would submit at the start of the financial year. So basically on slide 3, the way we show the spending is that we show quarter 1 spending for each year relative to the projection.
Let me just check. Remember, can you see the slide doing there's something? It's, can you make it bigger? Is it me or is it on your side, Mampo? Yeah, make it bigger.
I wanted to share it, but I think they're struggling to allow me to share. Whoever is sharing, just make it big, please.
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
Just go up, yes, up to the side and then click on, just click on the box that makes the view bigger. Go to your right, go to your right. Yes, there. Yes, make that bigger, please. Yes. We can work around this, Chairperson. So basically, yes, what we're trying to do is to show the committee the spending trends from the past. And what we've picked up in this round, Chairperson, the spending, the projected spending and the outcomes, we have it's not an underspending because we're comparing it to the projections, not to the actual allocation, but basically the spending was lower than projected by 8.2 billion. And if you look at the percentage of this is 3.2%, which is much lower than relative to other years, especially last year. So it means that the departments have significantly performed in terms of their spending patterns. 10%?
They're on the wrong slide. Yeah, that's where you should be.
Yes, it's like 3, please, whoever is sharing. So Chairperson, basically what we then did was we thought it would be critical to show the committee the composition of the spending before we even get to the department. So we looked at the economic classification, and in the economic classification, for example, for compensation of employees, the projection was 44 billion or 44.7 billion for this year in 2023-24. And the outcome of the spending was 46.790 billion, which is an over expenditure or over spending above projected by 2 billion. And this chairperson was mainly as a result of the wage agreement that was concluded after the departments have sent through their projections for the year. Of course, the departments have an opportunity to update these, but most of the updates will be incorporated in the MTBPS. So the over expenditure, if you see it on for different departments, it's mainly because the initial projections did not incorporate some of the wage agreement and employee-related costs. The second one, Chairperson, that we looked at was goods and services, where basically the departments spent very close to what was projected, and we have a less than projection of about 755 million, which is significantly lower compared to other years. And even if you look at the percentage itself, 4.1% is much, much lower compared to the other years in terms of looking at goods and services. On slide 4, Chairperson, we look at interest on rent, we look at payment for capital assets, we look at payments for financial assets. But I think what we want to bring to the attention of the committee is the payments for capital assets, because that's mainly infrastructure projects and also spending on buildings and machinery. Even if you look at then, Chairperson, the lower than projected spending is only half a billion, which is 17.9%. of the projections. And if you look at relative to other years, you will notice that this is also the lowest deviation of spending that has been recorded. So it means for this year, the departments are trying to spend as much as possible. However, the less than anticipated spending, unfortunately, would be on transfers and subsidies. And the first part where we see significant less than projected spending would be for transfers to departmental agencies and accounts. I will go through the departments that are calculated in this, but here it's a 3.3 billion lower than projected spending. And if you look at the percentage, it's 6.2%, which is the second largest compared to since 2018-19, with the highest being in 2020-21. Another one that was significantly lower would have been the transfers to household, and that would be the transfers, the grant, which I'll discuss later. But here it is an under less than projected spending of 1.7 billion. If you look at it, Chairperson, relative to the allocation, it's a deviation of 2.6%. In the next slide, we also looked at the projections, the transfers and subsidies, but here we want to highlight the transfers to provinces and municipalities, where the lower than projected spending has been recorded at 1.2 billion in terms of the deviation between what is projected and the actual spending, which means it's 6.1%. Chairperson,
I just want to make sure that we're on the same slide, because you are talking about transfers to provinces and so on. And what is appearing for me on my side is departmental agencies, is foreign governments and international organization. Where are we?
We should be on slide 6, Chairperson.
What slide is it? This one, where do I see the, where do I see where the slide 6 or?
Lapha phezulu la kuno National Treasury call. Yes, there. That should be slide 6.
It looks like you know, on my side, for instance, what I'm having here is It's transfers and such to non-profit institutions now. Okay,
there, yes, there is. So is.
Now, I probably exactly in the wrong one. On the wrong one, yeah. Let's continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be slower when I explain the next slide. So here, Chair, what we're trying to show, Ubuti, the transfers to provinces and municipalities contributed to less than projected spending. And in terms of percentages, it's a deviation of 6.1%. And in terms of numbers, it's a deviation of 2 billion. Next slide, please. That should be slide 8. Thank you. So, Chair, now we then focus on the individual departments and what we did for the slides to try and assist the committee in terms of analysis is that we show you again the spending for the first quarter of the year in different years, and we have actual spending, which would be what the departments have spent to date. But we also have initial projection where in the first of April, they send the expected drawings, which we use as the projections. But also the pinkish column is running projections. And those running projections, Chairperson, basically is when we ask departments if they want to update their drawings or their estimates given where they are in terms of the spending. Most of the times, there's not much deviation between the running projection and the initial projection, so I'll just focus on the initial projections. So, Chairperson, the first department that showed significant less spending than projected was science and innovation, with a deviation of 2.2 billion, and this translated to a percentage of 65.70%. For this department, Chairperson, this is significant, but basically the reasons why the department registered lower than expected spending was mainly because they haven't transferred most of the bigger transfers, and this was because the payments were not as planned. So we don't think that this is going to be a continuous problem for the department, because once they sort out these administrative glitches, then the transfers will go through. We don't have much of a problem, Chairperson, with the less than projected spending, because what this means is that the department is very thorough in assessing the applications and making sure that the entities meet the conditions that they need to meet, so that when they get the transfers, there are no irregularities. So for now, when we spoke to the department, they're just clarifying those few issues, and then the transfers would flow in the following quarter. Next slide, please. And that should be slide 9. Human settlements. Thank you. Chairperson, here we're looking at a 33.8% deviation from projections, which resulted in 2.2 billion of less than projected spending. And this is mainly because the department always looks at, or needs to make sure that the municipalities they adhere to the Division of Revenue Bill. And basically, these deviations or these delays are due to the department ensuring that there is alignment. And sometimes the approval of these transfers get finalized later in the process. Furthermore, Chairperson, the Appropriation Act or the Division of Revenue was enacted later on. So basically, the payment could only be done after the Division of Revenue Act was promulgated. So most of these transfers will take place in the following months, and we don't foresee a significant less than projected spending for human settlements. For social development, Chairperson, if you look at the report, the less than projected spending is significantly higher than what I have in the presentation, and this is because the 21 billion that was not recorded for the month of June. But I didn't want Chairperson.
You are still on human settlement. Okay, there you go. Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. So in the report for the Department of Social Development, the less than projected spending is much higher than the 1.6 billion that we show here. But that is only because the department hasn't cleared the June transactions. So basically, we decided that it would be beneficial for the committee to look at the exact underspending rather than us bringing the operational issues. So if you look at the slide, we took out that 21 billion because that's just the transaction issues and it will be cleared in the following months. Therefore, the true less than projected spending for social development is 1.6 billion. And this is coming from the SRD grant. And this mainly, Chairperson and honorable members, is because of the stringent income verification methods that has been implemented in making sure that we improve the targeting of this grant. But we also saw less than projected spending in the old age grant, as well as the child support grant. And this is purely due to lower than anticipated beneficiaries. In the next slide, Chairperson, where we look at the National Treasury, where we see less than projected spending, this is mainly due to the delayed payment for the land bank, but also there were some delays or some less than projected spending on compensation of employees and transfers and subsidies, but mainly this is due to the funded vacancies that are not filled up yet. And then for the next one, which is transport, that will be slide 12, the less than projected spending amounted to a deviation of 4.8%. And in terms of the value, it was 876 billion. But basically this, Chairperson, was mainly due to the delayed transfers to the Road Traffic Infringement Agency, and this is mainly because of the court case that they're dealing with the constitutionality of the administrative adjudication of the offences, and also the payments that are outstanding to the provincial roads maintenance grants, and this is mainly for the refurbishment component. If you look at the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, the less than projection amounted to 557 million, and in terms of percentage, this was 14.6%. If you look at this department across the board, Chairperson, this is an improvement because this amount, in terms of both amount and percentages, this has been the lowest that has been recorded since 2018-19, but here, Chairperson, is mainly due to processing issues, and we think once the department irons out these processing issues, then we will see improvement in the spending going forward. The last one, Chairperson, would be water and sanitation here. Even this department here, if you look at both the value, which is 526 million, as well as the percentage deviation of 14.6%, it's much better compared to the rest of the year. And this is also mainly due to delays in transfers to water boards. And I think when we come back in the second quarter, most of these non-processed invoices will be sorted out and the transfers would be made. But I think it is good to see an improvement in terms of the spending of the department relative to the rest of the years. Then, Chairperson, there were then departments where they spent more than what they projected. And most of these departments, Chairperson, we're on slide 16. Most of these departments are compensation heavy. So basically what the departments did was they submitted their drawing schedule before the wage agreement. Now, what we have to do, we need to work with the departments to make sure that they revise their drawing schedule so that it aligns with their projected spending for the month. So basically the first one was the Department of Defense or the National Defense Force. And here we're looking at above expected spending of 1.2 billion, representing a deviation of 10.4%. And this is mainly one because of the wage agreement that was reached, but also the Department of Defense Chairperson and all other board members has been struggling with the compensation ceilings that are not supporting of the current personnel numbers. So the combination of those two resulted in a larger than projected spending, but also the payments relating to the GEPF liabilities have also resulted in the spending that is larger than projected. The next one, which is slide 17, is police chairperson and honorable members. And because this is a personnel-heavy department, the issues are still the same. And we're seeing an above projected spending of 2.1 billion, which is 4.9%. And this is mainly because of that wage agreement. There are other issues there, but mainly this would be as a result of the wage agreement that was not taken into consideration when the department was doing the drawings. The third one, chairperson, is correctional services. That will be on slide 18. And correctional services is a 333 million that is above the projections. And this is mainly due to the cost of living adjustment, of course, that we're done. But there's also the increase in the procurement of fuel, oil, and gas. And this is mainly due to load shedding. But the biggest reason, of course, will be the implementation of the cost of living adjustment. Home Affairs, which is slide 19, same issue, chairperson, where the projections are much larger. Well, they're larger than the actual outcome is larger than the projection by 272 million. And this is mainly because, one, these guys, the Home Affairs always apply for self-financing, and the self-financing expenditure, chairperson, is considered during the MPBPS. So once it is considered and it is approved, then that over or above projected spending will then be compensated by the self-financing. So self-financing, chairperson and honorable members, is basically income that Home Affairs generates from printing passports, printing IDs, most of it because the PFMA requires that all money that is generated come back into the fiscus. Then Home Affairs has to pay in the money to the National Revenue Fund. And then during the time of the MPBPS, they apply for what we call self-financing. So once that is approved, then the department spending will definitely be aligned to their projections. So chairperson, this would be the national department and the outcome. So basically the message for the committee is that there are two types of departments that we bring to your attention. The first ones would be the departments that are withholding transfers, and they're still working with the entities to make sure that they adhere to the DORA or they adhere to the conditions. And those departments are underspending, but we don't think that the committee should worry about the underspending level, because if you look at relatively in the past, the current and less than projected spending are not as severe as before. Then we have the second set of departments where they have recorded more than what they said they were going to spend. And most of that is because of the wage agreement that was reached after the department has submitted their drawing. So for now, we don't see a risk in terms of the departments not adhering to their projected spending. However, chairperson, I think it would be critical to bring to your attention that we still, as the Treasury and Cabinet, we're still working on mechanisms that will assist the departments to remain within their allocated baselines despite the wage agreement that has been reached. That work is ongoing, and we will be presenting, of course, in cabinet, and then hopefully we will put that information or those proposals into the MTBPS. But we are aware that some of the departments may struggle to absorb the current wage bill, but we are, that is work in progress, and most of this will be dealt with in the second quarter when we come back to the committee. Just quickly, Chairperson, just mindful of time, then most of the public entities that we'll be presenting today are public entities that were selected by the committee, of course, but we're looking at the full year and the full year of 2022-23. I'm going to go through them quite quickly. So the person who is sharing the screen, please bear with me as I move quickly through this. So, Chairperson and Honourable Members, the first one is the Comm Fund. When we did the assessment, we realized that there's not much to worry about because they have a surplus of 6.5 billion, and this is mainly due to higher assessment levies, but also they recorded, we're on slide 20, they recorded lower beneficiary payments, and as a result, they recorded the surplus. Legal aid, that would be slide 23. The entity basically used the allocations that they received. So Chairperson and Honourable Members, there's nothing much to report from the legal aid. The National Empowerment Fund, they recorded higher revenues, and these higher revenues were mainly because of better interest, that is slide 26. Better interest and less disbursement, and as a result, they recorded a surplus of 349 million. The National Health Laboratory Services, I think here, the surplus of 1.8 billion was mainly as a result of the increase in the test volume as well as better interest, and we don't see any issues to highlight, Chairperson, here, because the entity's balance sheet or income statement is looking better than what they anticipated. And then looking at the National Research Foundation, that would be slide 30. Basically, there's an alignment between what they projected to be spending, what they projected to be revenue, and if you look at their surplus deficit for the year, it's only 64 million, which is very close to what they anticipated to spend. And then when we look at the National Skills Fund, Chairperson and Honourable Members, what we see here is the surplus of 2.5 billion, and this surplus unfortunately was due to delays in the approval processes for their new project, but also delays in infrastructure project at TVET colleges, and hopefully the entity can improve the pace at which they assess these applications so that they don't record such significant surpluses on the back of delays in some of the critical projects that they have to do. Moving to the National Skills Financial Aid Scheme, which is page or slide 34. While we see that the receipts were much lower than what was projected, transfers were also lower. If you look at the transfers and subsidies, the expectation was that they're going to transfer 47 billion, but the actual transfer was 44 billion, meaning these were less than projected by 3.1 billion. So that 3.1 billion partially or more than fully compensated the less than anticipated receipts of 1.3 billion, and as a result, we're looking at a surplus of 1.6 billion. Chairperson, moving to PRASA, I think the first thing I want to highlight to the committee, which is very good news, is that for the first time in a very long time, PRASA managed to spend almost all the allocations that they received. So the less spending that we have been seeing from PRASA in the past, it seems as if this year they've managed to really push their spending outcome. If you look at this, Chairperson, the spending for PRASA, especially for their infrastructure projects or payment for capital assets, the forecast was a spending of 12.6 billion and they managed to save and to spend the 12.4 billion. So when we look at this year's performance of this entity, Chairperson, I think we are confident that moving forward, the entity has resolved their capacity constraint issues, and we're less worried about the entity because for a couple of years, Chair, as you know, PRASA was unable to spend the budget that has been allocated. But for now, looking at these numbers, we're quite comfortable that at least things are changing and PRASA is starting to regain what they need to do, and they're starting to bring back some of their lines into operations, which is a very good thing, Chairperson. I think that's what we want you to note as the committee. Then the Road Accident Fund, Chairperson, of course, the entity continues to be involved, but they've managed to basically spend what was allocated closely with a deficit of only 179 million. But of course, we still would want Parliament to consider the bill, despite the fact that the entity is managing its cash or its liquidity, because an entity can manage the liquidity, it doesn't mean that they're moving away from insolvency. But that's why we think that the Parliament should continue to look at the bill that is being managed by the Department of Transport. Then quickly, Chairperson, South African National Parks, basically here they had much higher revenue from the sales of their the sales of goods and services, much more than what has been projected, and then they also recorded much higher than anticipated spending, especially looking at the payments for capital assets, and then they recorded a deficit of 123 million. The South African Revenue Services Chairperson, the spending is sort of aligned to what was projected. However, they haven't really filled all the positions that they anticipated to fill. They haven't yet paid bonuses. The office consolidation and refurbishment project has also not yet been finalized. So we think that in this current year, 23-24, once all of those transactions get sorted out, we're not going to see the surplus deficit that has been recorded in the previous year. But I mean, SARS received transfers from the National Treasury, and they mostly spend within what has been allocated. Then the last few ones, Chairperson, the SANRAL's cash surplus is 37 billion, but this is not a pure surplus in its own sense, but it's because there was an allocation in the special appropriation to deal with the debt that was created by the Gauteng the GFIP program. So this is just this shows the allocation that was done in that year. So it's not a true sense a surplus, but additional funding so that they can deal with the debt that has been incurred through to GFIP. In slide 49, SASA, not much to report on, Chairperson. They are spending what has been allocated, and they have a surplus of 558 million. And then tourism, there's alignment to the spending, that would be slide 51. And then the unemployment insurance fund, Chairperson, here we see that they collected more revenue than what was anticipated, and this is from the transfers that they received, but also they recorded significantly lower expenditures than what they anticipated. And that is mainly on the beneficiary payments, where they forecast that they were going to disperse 25 billion, but at the end of the year, they only disbursed 16 billion. That meant it was 9 billion less than what was projected. As a result, the combination of higher revenues and lower expenditure resulted in a surplus of 16 billion. So, Chairperson, that is us from the public finance side. I'm going to ask my colleague Ravesh to then take you through to the rest of the state-owned companies. Thank you so much, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you, Dr. Modisa. Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. We will be taking you through the state-owned companies. So I'm going to just ask Ms. Mohari to put up the presentation, if she's got presentation slides. Thank you. I now hand over to Lefente, who will take us through Land Bank, and then the rest of the team will follow. Thank you. Thank you, honorable chair members.
Thank you, Ravesh. I'm hoping that you can all see me. Yeah, let me adjust my laptop. Okay, I think what you can do, Ravesh, is can roll the slides.
Good,
yeah,
good,
Chair.
Good
thanks,
morning.
Thanks.
Good morning,
Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Right. Okay. Please come in then. Good morning, Ravesh.
Okay, fine.
Morning, Chair.
Chair, the story around the land bank does not change much. It remains the same as we have reported it early in the year. The only thing that one can actually highlight in this slide is that we are finalizing, which is plot point number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, we are finalizing processing the payment, the repayment to the guaranteed lenders. The only guaranteed lenders that are left is the World Bank and African Development Bank, which we owe about 400 and so millions out of the 1 million that is left for the land bank for this financial year. And then the remainder of that money will be transferred to the land bank for planned finance. Otherwise, the liability solution discussions have resumed. Unfortunately, it still becomes very difficult for land bank to agree with the lenders on a number of things, but it seems like there's progress, and we're hoping that they would be concluding this liability solution within this financial year. We can move to the next slide, Ravesh. Now, the land bank itself received an unqualified audit with opinion, basically, and this opinion was just around the issue of how they classified some of their assets. But remember, land bank is coming from a situation of a very clean audit last year after implementing their remedial plan. And we've been having a discussion with the land bank on working on the financial, developing a business case, a future business case that will actually lead land bank to a more financial sustainability. And we're hoping that land bank would actually conclude this process before the end of this year. Yeah, I think more than any other thing, land bank is also finalizing some few things, discussions with us regarding how they should actually improve and structure the blended finance. Remember, Chair, we've indicated that we have allocated about out of the 7 billion, about 3.4 of that amount would be actually going for 3.5 billion of that amount would be actually going for the land bank. Now, on our side, we're trying to make sure that this blended finance becomes more successful and move land bank to a situation where it doesn't only become a commercial, but it becomes more of a development bank. We can move to the next slide, Ravesh. The next slide is more about the financial. The situation remains financially. You would remember that land bank does not have, is not able to actually borrow. And the majority of the work that land bank is actually doing, it's actually supported a little bit with the own revenues that land bank is actually generating. You'll realize in the first slide that we've indicated that land bank has actually made a profit of 135 for the first quarter. Yeah, but I think then the most important thing that one can highlight here, apart of these small numbers that you see, is that we have managed to reduce the liability, the funding liabilities of Land Bank, which is bullet point number four. We've reduced the liability solution, liability funding liabilities of Land Bank. Remember, when Land Bank went into default, the funding liabilities of Land Bank were sitting at about 40 billion. Now we have reduced that to 17.1 billion, and we're hoping that Land Bank is able to collect some of its loans from their own data. They'll be able to actually reduce this number more and more. Apart from that, I think, Chair, the most important things that I wanted to relay with regards to this, the performance of Land Bank, that's all. The other thing maybe that I can actually highlight is that the non-performing loan portfolio also, it's growing, but Land Bank has actually put a strategy on how to manage this portfolio so that we find the improvement in terms of the amount of money that Land Bank can actually collect from its clients. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Ravaj.
Thanks, Tufenzo. It's Jeff now with Eskom. Jeff, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ravesh, and good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Am I audible, Ravesh?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yes, Chairperson, with regards to the unaudited report that you've received for Eskom from Eskom for the first quarter, Eskom continues to report the losses. What we've also picked up in the first quarter is that the revenue has actually increased, but it was largely driven by the tariff increases, but nothing, but it's only the tariff that are actually increasing. What is worrying, Chairperson, that we actually want to register to this committee is the increase in municipal debt, which continues to be a problem in terms of payment to Eskom, which also hinders Eskom's financial sustainability going forward. The other thing that we also want to highlight is around the debt, which was sitting at 453. But we must also indicate in relation to debt that the intervention that government has put in place to actually pay off the debt of Eskom, we will see a reduction in the debt going forward as a result of the Eskom debt relief that government is actually providing. The other part that we also want to highlight is that in terms of the guarantee framework that Eskom was granted of 350, Eskom is no longer enjoying that facility as it had expired at the end of March. So going forward, Eskom is no longer actually having any support in the form of guarantees except the debt relief arrangement. Let's move on, Ravesh, to the next slide. Also, from an operational perspective, we are also noting the continued decline in the quota in relation to the energy availability factor. But we must also indicate that there are measures that are actually being put in place to actually deal with the energy availability factor. We must also indicate, Chairperson, that the intervention that the Minister of Finance has put in place to do an independent assessment of Eskom's 14 coal power station is actually reaching a conclusion this month. So we have been seeing all the stations, we have seen all the stations and actually understand what some of the challenges that the stations are actually experiencing. Those findings will then find itself into the corporate plan of Eskom's corporate plan in the next financial year. The other part that we actually want to highlight for the quarter was the unplanned availability, which also continues to actually hamper Eskom's performance in terms of the stations, as well as the concern around the inability of Eskom to continue to meet its environmental emissions requirement, which poses a threat in terms of continued operation of these stations if they are not able to meet the minimum requirements that the legislation requires. The next slide is Ravesh. Chairperson, the other point that we want to just highlight in relation to the debt relief is that the Act was assented to in July and published in the Government Gazette. subsequent to that, ESCOM then qualified to then start receiving the disbursement as per the intervention that the minister has set aside. We must also confirm that the first tranche of this current financial year of 16 billion has been actually dispersed to ESCOM of the 78 billion that is set aside for this current financial year. A task team has been set up comprising of the officials of National Treasury, the Department of Public Enterprises and ESCOM. And on a quarterly basis, this task team will sit to monitor ESCOM's compliance with the conditions that have been set. And if ESCOM complies with the conditions, then the loan will then be converted into equity. Failure by ESCOM to meet the condition, it will therefore mean that the ESCOM will be granted another quarter to meet the conditions. Failure to meet in that subsequent quarter, then ESCOM will then, that portion of the loan will then be subject to ESCOM paying it back at the end of the term at market interest rates that will be set at the time. We also want to confirm and indicate to this committee that the conditions have now been concluded and have been formally communicated by the Minister of Finance to ESCOM's board chairperson. We must also indicate chairperson and the committee members that in crafting and finalizing the conditions, we did take into account the comments and the suggestion and inputs that this committee made as when we were actually doing our public consultation, as well as some of the inputs that we actually received from the public. The next slide, Ravesh. So, Chairperson, what we also want to table to this committee today is the conditions as they have been communicated to the board chairperson of ESCOM by the Minister of Finance. These are the conditions that have actually been attached to the Debt Relief Act, and these are the conditions that on a quarterly basis, as I indicated earlier, the committee that will be sitting on a monthly basis will actually be monitoring to see if ESCOM complies with these conditions. And if ESCOM meets, as I said, these will be converted, the portion of the loan for the quarter will then be converted into equity. If not, then it will then move on to the next quarter. And then, as I said, if not, then it will then attract interest at the end of the term. Key among these conditions, Chairperson and the committee member, is that ESCOM is no longer allowed to invest in new generation capacity in the sector. That if any greenfield generation project ESCOM wants to undertake, they will then have to do it with the written approval of the Minister of Finance. However, ESCOM is still allowed to invest in transmission and distribution capital expenditure. Also, ESCOM is no longer allowed to borrow. If they do want to borrow any new facility, they'll have to do that via the written approval of the Minister of Finance. And I must also indicate that, as I said earlier, there are no guarantees that ESCOM will also is enjoying at this stage. Any guarantee and any borrowing will actually have to be, or any borrowing, new borrowings will have to come, and they will have to do it via the written approval of the Minister of Finance. The other important area around this is that ESCOM is also encouraged to continue with the unbundling process and also to obtain the lender consent that is required to continue with the unbundling process of the business. ESCOM is also encouraged not to implement any remuneration adjustment that will negatively affect the financial position of the entity and its sustainability. And also the last one is that joint approval of any Public Finance Management Act transaction will have to be done by both the Minister of Public Enterprises and our Minister. That is all from my side, Ravesh. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. We now move over to SAA and Transnet, and I think Tato will take us through. Thank you, Tato.
Apologies. Thanks, Ravesh, and thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the committee. Ravesh, if we move to the next slide. This background slide, we have presented it to the committee on numerous occasions. It basically just gives background in terms of where we were required to appear before the committee and present updates in terms of the disbursement that was made to SAA. And I think we can move on to the next slide, Ravesh. Similarly, to ESCOM, we are also presenting conditions from additional allocations that were made over and above the 10.5 billion that was allocated to SAA for the implementation of the business rescue plan. I'm sure committee members will remember that in the February budget of this year, the minister allocated 1 billion to SAA for the settlement of outstanding business rescue obligations. So the conditions are tabled as follows. I'm not going to go through them, but to know, just to highlight some key ones around them, of which a significant progress is being made in terms of compliance to all government guarantees to SAA will be cancelled, and the funds are specifically and exclusively appropriated to settle business rescue obligations. And as part of those conditions as well, National Treasury will conduct a review of the strategic equity partner agreement to ensure that it does not give rise to any future fiscal obligations. I think we can move on to the next slide, Ravesh. This is just to give a high level update in terms of SAA's operational and financial performance. The group as at the end of June 2023 recorded a loss of 150 million against a budgeted a loss of 182 million against a budgeted loss of 150 million. And the operation cost as well underperformed. The other method to highlight on this slide is that Mango remains under business rescue since 2021 and it hasn't flown ever since. And I think, Ravesh, we can move on to the next slide as well, which is Transnet. Next slide. As we have highlighted to the committee before, Transnet Rail operations continue to be negatively impacted by ongoing security incidents and locomotive unavailability and the poor state of the country's rail infrastructure. The inefficiencies of Transnet's rail network poses a significant risk to the South African economy, and we have been highlighting that it requires urgent intervention. Over and above the negative performance on the freight rail side, port productivity as well is significantly lower than benchmark African and European ports. And this is another critical area that needs an intervention. But the committee will also remember when we appeared the last time, we did highlight that one of the conditions provided to Transnet in the allocation last year was that National Treasury will lead an independent review of all freight corridors with a specific focus on identifying opportunities for operational efficiency improvement. We are actually at quite advanced stages in terms of that process. An RFP for the independent review has been issued with a closing date of the 15th of this month. Next slide, please. The slide also provides a high-level overview of Transnet revenue and operational performance. Transnet's overall performance for the period has deteriorated in all critical commodity segments and business flows, and they are not achieving their target as set out in their corporate plan. Rail volumes are behind budget due to commodities not meeting their budgets. Container volumes as well, which are handled by ports, are also performing lower than budget, as well as pipeline volumes, which are significantly performing under budget. And the rest of that slide just highlights committee members the concerns that we have underscored for, especially around ongoing security concerns, wherein Transnet is forced to spend a quite significant amount of money on security in order to ensure or to counter things such as vandalism, theft of cargo, and so forth. And just to close off the presentation, highlighting the group revenue performance, it was 13.8% below budget and 4.7% below the prior year for the same period. And that's all on Transnet and SAA. Chairperson, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tato. We now move on to the post office. George will come in. Thanks, George.
Thanks, Ravesh. Can move on to the next slide, please. Excuse my voice, I'm catching on flu. So on SAPO, earlier this year, the entity was placed under provisional liquidation by a group of its creditors, simply because SAPO couldn't honor its payments, and mostly because of its dire financial constraint. And then subsequently, Cabinet Bank approved the entity to be placed under business rescue instead of the liquidation. And that required then a business rescue practitioner to be appointed. At this point, that is completed by the BCDT. And they've also invited National Treasury to form part of a task team to especially monitor the progress on the business rescue plan. But at this point, we haven't had our first meeting yet. We just finished last month the memo that allows us to form that monitoring team, where with National Treasury, DCTG, and SAP will be reporting to it. And the business rescue practitioner will then be giving reports on this team. And towards the end is that the you remember that there was 2.4 billion allocated for SAPO. And as part of the conditions, there is that now, as part of the business rescue process, the 2.4 billion is now allowed to be used as a part of the process to undertake some of the work that needs to be done. And the rest of, if you can move on to the next slide, Travis, I think we're talking to conditions where most of the conditions are mostly set around to try and avoid funds being used for things like making bonus payments. You see on second bullet, they're making confirmation that more bonus payments and salary increases are implemented in taking some of these funds. It's just so that money is channeled towards areas where it would assist with the turnaround rather than just pay salaries or ongoing loss-making operations of the entity. The rest is just to make sure that we have full understanding and reporting done. Although we have it done monthly on monthly monitoring and some of the quarterly monitoring for SAPO, for business rescue practitioner would also want to give some attention to this so that he has a full understanding of where the problem started. And if you could move on to the next slide, Ravesh, thanks. And then the financial slide just mostly talks to the fact that revenues continue to decline, and mostly due to some of the branch closures that had happened since the last report. And there were additional branches that were closed. And then the remaining offices also struggling because of load shedding, just like everyone else. Load shedding, this affects the operations on the already troubled operations that SAPO has said. So overall, SAPO has also recorded just the 367 million loss for quarter one. In the report, they would record that, there's a better than budget loss, but if you look at it, you would get the understanding that it's actually because you spend less than what you had budgeted on expenses. So it makes it look like against the budget, you've done better on your either in your profit line or your losses. It's just a little bit over 1,000 operational branches, but only of those 1,000, only 10% are profitable from the assessments. And we have a 4.7 billion outstanding in liabilities as of June, settlement of about 3.9 billion is recorded to be owed to the Post Bank. And SAPO at this stage doesn't have any guarantees or any additional funding appropriated as yet. Thanks, Robert.
Okay, thanks, George. We now move over to the last entity, which is Danel. And I think Colin, if you can come in. Thank you.
No, thank you, Ravesh. Good morning, Chairperson and the honorable members. As we are all aware, Danel continues implementing its turnaround plan, which comprises of disposing non-core assets, consolidating core capabilities, and achieving growth through collaborations, amongst other things. However, it should be noted that Danel is encountering delays in implementing its plan, especially with regard to the disposal of the identified non-core assets. Of the 3.378 billion allocated to Danel in the 2022-23 MTBTS, only 55% became accessible to the entity. This proportion corresponds to the proceeds generated from the sale of non-core assets by the entity. The National Treasury maintains that Danel needs to realize proceeds from the sale of the remaining non-core assets before they can access the amount that they have reinvested in this regard. We can move to the next slide. Yeah. In terms of financial performance, Danel is lagging behind with its revenue target. As a result, the entity realized net loss amounting to 206 million. This is compared to the budgeted loss of 182 million. However, it should be noted that the received portion of the recapitalization was utilized to settle Danel's debt obligation, support working capital, and cover restructuring costs, among other things. Only 262 million thereof remains for utilization. That said, Danel has reinvested 1.537 billion from the remaining portion of the recapitalized fund, which will only be drawn down upon realizing proceeds from sale of assets. The net financial stability remains delicate. Prioritizing the successful execution of the turnaround plan is crucial, and Danel is consistently urged to finalize its asset disposal initiative. Thank you. Back to you, Ravesh.
Okay, thank you, Colin. Thank you, Team Treasury, Chair, and Honorable Members. It's back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mampo. Thank you, Ravesh, and the team for the presentation. Before we get to the next item, which is still the same item, before I ask all members to come in, I just want to make at this point that all members remember that the focus of our presentation today, it's more on expenditure of the departments, the agencies, and the SOCs. I saw in the presentations, colleagues from Treasury started to give us some helicopter view about other things which are happening in the different, especially different SOEs and the agencies. I think that does help to give us the better understandings of what's happening in those different institutions. But I just want to say, remember all members, that if you want in-depth engagement with some of these, for instance, SOCs, we usually call the minister responsible and the entity itself to come and engage with ourselves so that these questions can be also asked from them, and we get better understanding of what is happening about the number of things. I just wanted to underline this thing that we shouldn't forget that mainly we are looking at the expenditure, over expenditure, under expenditure, reasons thereof, and exactly what the departments are trying to do to try and correct a situation. For instance, is a question of understanding or overspending. Having said that, all members, you know how we do it. You'll give me your names, people would like to interact with the presentation, and then after that, I'll allow the department to respond. Yes, all members, I'm listening.
Mlenzana.
Honorable Mlenzana.
Sarupin.
Sheikh Imam. Sheikh Imam.
Mataba.
Sarupin. Honorable Sheikh Imam. Honorable Matafa. Honorable members, I'm listening. I've got Honorable Mlenza, Honorable Sarupin, Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Matafa. Any other honorable member? Okay. I see Honorable Tobias. Honorable Kaiso. Do I have any other honorable member wanting to come up? Okay. Honorable members, thank you very much. I will start with the honorable. Okay, before I start, honorable members, you know you time yourselves. I don't want to time you yet. But just be cognizant of the fact that the other honorable members would like to. But please try to raise all your important issues that you want to raise. I see Honorable Tobias, when we come to you, I would ask Mashile to disable you so that we are able to... okay, thanks. I hear you say it's resolved. Honorable Mlenzana, please come in.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson, and the team treasurer is led by Dr. Mampo. A few questions, Chairperson. Because as you were talking, I began deleting some. But then, just before that, abiding by what you were cautioning us about, there is this one, which I, of course, I've already deleted, but my consciousness is, you know, applying to me, Chair.
Come with it,
Just for me to know what is it that is happening at PRASA currently. If we just get a helicopter clue for us, you are able to say to the electorate what is it exactly that is happening at PRASA. We're only getting the news snippets. Otherwise, one would be happy. Then, sir, let me come back. I have only focused to ESCOM. Starting by saying, Chair, I am very happy that the conditions at ESCOM are in fluidation. And there seems to be some light down there, the tunnel. But then there is this question of the energy availability factor, Chairperson, which is worrying to me. Even here, I don't have suggestions. And I would hate a situation where you only come with a problem without solutions. But can we, Team Treasury and team, have a sense as to what is the panacea to the challenging energy availability, you know, factor? If we could get a clue and perhaps some kind of a promise that at some stage something we are getting briefed also through the media that it's inflation is happening. But just one little question, Chair, yes. From an appropriations point of view, are we ready to, as unbundling happens, to begin funding the three separate or autonomous entities? Are we ready? In the light of the fact that you begin now to see each entity trying to pull out. And the other one, which may be political, as you said, Chairperson, if Dr. Mampo and team are not able to answer, they're not forced to. Is there no selling out of some parts or some elements of ESCOM? As I'm saying, if Treasury is unable to deal with this one, fine, because I think it's political. Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Linzana. Honorable Sarupen, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. And Chair, also in line with your cautionary notes, I will just ask some helicopter questions about the state-owned companies. I think, Chair, just starting with the Land Bank, I note that the Land Bank is profitable at this quarter, but obviously it would be good to get an idea of what operations the Land Bank is currently still filling, considering that three versions of liability solution has been rejected and so on. So it'd be good to get an update on what it is that the Land Bank is actually doing at the moment. Then with regards to ESCOM's expenditure, Chair, I just would like to know if Treasury is tracking the amount of money ESCOM is spending in its open cycle gas turbines to alleviate load shedding, and if they will be able to maintain that throughout the year. I think that we know that ESCOM has been using open cycle gas turbines to lower the stages of load shedding, but then when we get to towards the end of the financial year, then we have much higher stages of load shedding as the budget runs out. Then, Chair, just regards to Mango, I'd like to understand what the future is of that, since it's been in business rescue for quite a while now, more than 2 years, and it hasn't flown. And then, Chair, with regards to the various government departments and their first quarter reports, and I know that it's been broken down into administrative services and all the other departments and the way it's functioning, I'd like to get a sense of capital expenditure, because what we really need to understand is obviously that capital projects and infrastructure projects are what is key to creating the economic multiplier effect and begin to assist with growth. And we always know that their capital expenditure is very, very slow in the first quarter. And that usually means that capital projects that have been planned haven't been executed. And so you find that those projects don't get off the ground in time, and then we have cost escalation and all of those other things. I can't get a clear sense from this presentation as to whether National Treasury or not tracks capital projects and whether there's slow spending on those. So I'd just like to get an overview of what's going on with departmental capital projects in the first quarter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Sheikh Imam?
Yeah, thank you very much. I too want to talk about helicopters in the sky. And very importantly, something that I am battling with Chairperson, and I hope that at some stage you're going to help me. And maybe through your Treasury can help us. And that is on SAA. Seems like that with all the interventions, nothing is really happening. And I think my colleague has just spoken about Mango as well. Very conveniently, Mango's put out of business. New airlines have hit the market and all are very prosperous. But very importantly, I'm battling with something. I'm still looking for the figures as to what SAA fleet of 14 aircraft was sold for. What was the total amount? And what is the total amount that was paid back in leasing these planes from SAP Air, which we sold to them under Coleman Andrews? Who authorized this and told the board? And then I want Treasury to tell me, over and above the board, who has the responsibility to approve such transactions? And I'm asking this because this is the reason why SAA is in the state it is. And there's more to contribute to that. Air routes that have been given to new airlines, conflict of interest and a whole lot of things. So I hope that you'll be able to give us some. I know I might be deviating a little bit. Now, on the issue of this first quarter, will you not attribute the underspending in the first quarter to poor planning and or all the emphasis and focus being on the last quarter on fiscal dumping to ensure that we don't underspend? So no attention was put to the first quarter, and that is why we're finding ourselves often underspending in the first quarter. So if there was strategic plans in place, everything should be running smoothly. It's clearly not running. Perhaps you can tell us how far are we on the issue of the zero-based budgeting? Because I think to a very large extent, it seems like that because they don't plan, they can't spend. That's the other problem. I've spoken about the disposal of the assets. Now, I remember that you've raised, you did explain. I'm okay, this chair, I see you. Are you? I'm okay?
No, continue. Don't again guess me.
Okay. Then the other problem that I have is this, that what do you believe we must do as far as municipalities are concerned? It's quite a burden on ESCOM, I can understand that. But the fact is that these municipalities are buying at a price, selling at a profit, taking the entire money and spending it and not paying back. Now, we're hearing this again and again every year, every quarter, we hear the same thing. But the measures that he's putting in place is not solving the problem, because on the one hand, if you take stringent action, that is ESCOM taking against them, there'll be no supply of energy. People are going to suffer, but people are innocent because they are paying. What do you envisage as Treasury? What have you proposed that we can do differently so that we can get the money in? Okay. Or municipalities are more accountable. The other thing is which I'm battling to find, Chairperson, is I have requested through Treasury on a few occasions to find out the cash reserves of some of the local authorities particularly. And I know that doesn't go into what we're discussing today, but even that does not seem to become, you know, bearing any fruit. I'm just not getting this information. I don't know why. But on the issue of PRASA, yes, it's very good news that PRASA has managed to spend. Do you foresee PRASA making a turnaround based on that they are spending timeously? How are you measuring the financial reports that you are getting together with an AMA chairperson knows where I'm going, that you're ensuring there's value for money, that indeed with the money that has been spent is in line with the services that have been delivered or the infrastructure in this particular case in terms of PRASA. On the first quarter, generally, we can't expect much because it's always been the norm. There's been a lot of underspending. And then, okay, I'll go to the last one on road accident fund. For over a large period of time, we've been finding that the road accident fund is not effective. Has Treasury ever proposed some new model for this road accident fund? Because it's just not working. And if you notice now, the claims that are coming in, and of course there's a high level of abuse, even with the legal fraternity being involved in it, and things, I don't know how much this is true, but Chairperson, I'm hearing people actually go and stand sometimes or run in front of vehicles. So people were saying that they were getting a testing. They want to become HIV positive. We've got the grant that you're giving. Similar thing we're finding with road accident fund as well. So perhaps, I don't know, even there we need to look at it. I think what I'm trying to say is that we've identified a lot of problems over a period of time. But what we certainly haven't done is found an alternative so that it doesn't repeat itself. I'll stop there for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. I love your tie. Honorable Matafa, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning once again, Chair, members, Team National Treasury, guests, and the media. Chair, if you allow me, may I please keep my video off? I'm not comfortable with my network where I am.
Perfect.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me start with a comment linked to Honorable Sheikh's second point. and Honorable Mlenzana's first point around the positive developments in PRASA, particularly as it relates to spending. I, for one, Chair, I think the multidiscipline approach that the government has engaged in supporting PRASA should be commended. And I think these positive developments are based on that particular engagement. I know the committee would remember that we also did a visit to PRASA, and as SCOA, we then accepted the PRASA strategy and operational plans to be sound. So I think that we need to commend the work that we have put in together in our own different areas of operation. But having said that, Chair, maybe it's important if National Treasury has been able to identify any lessons in terms of how was PRASA able to improve their spending, and then see if whether is this something that can be transplanted into other SOEs and departments to be able to assist with their spending patterns, especially those in areas where there is underspending. Chair, my only two questions is with regards to the public works. We note that there is an underspending of 11 million, and this is a result of the moratorium that is placed on vacant posts. My question is just to find out if whether is this moratorium justifiable, that's one. And two, if whether are there any particular impacts on service delivery, how will they be mitigated? But having said that, Chair, we also note that there is an underspending generally in departments as related to filling of vacant posts. What is the view on National Treasury as far as this particular situation is concerned? And has there been a thinking of maybe National Treasury coming up with ways to see how best can this situation be prevented or corrected? My last question, Chair, is on the land bank. And I'm just interested to find out if whether, in terms of the recapitalization of 5 billion that is earmarked for land bank, are there any equity conditions that are set for the land bank to meet in order for this 500 billion to be advanced to the land bank? And if yes, what role will National Treasury be playing to ensure that these particular conditionalities are being met, so that this required funding is advanced? But thank you for the presentation, Team Treasury. It really assists in our work, and I agree with Honorable Sheikh. It's still early stages, and we'll really appreciate engaging further on the spending patterns that we encounter as you report to us. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Hi,
that's fine. So, all members, I don't know what's happening on that other side, because I couldn't unmute myself. And I think that's the problem that Honorable Tobias is also experiencing. Honorable Tobias, can you unmute yourself now? Can I hear you, Honorable Tobias? Okay. Mashile, please. Please unmute Honorable Tobias. Okay, while we are busy with that, let me jump to Honorable Kaiso, and please sort out Honorable Tobias, Mr. Mashile.
Okay, Chair.
Okay. Okay. I'm unmuted.
Unmute.
Sorry. No. Sorry, honorable members. Guys, in the administration there, please don't mess up with these things. 1 minute to unmute, the other one we can't do things. So, can you please sort that one out? That's what we've been dealing with. And honorable Tobias, are you honorable Tobias, are you able to come in?
He's fiddling with this thing.
Okay, there we are in now. Let's not touch anything. We can all do our things. Okay. Thanks, honorable Kaiso. Honorable Tobias, please come in.
Chair. You are mute, Chair.
Okay, no, I was trying to unmute myself. I'm fine now.
Okay.
Mashile.
Hello, Chair.
Can you now leave us and don't mute us and don't do anything? Let me check. Or yes, Tobias, just check. Can you speak? Or Tobias? Okay, let me allow Honorable. Can you please sort out Honorable Tobias? He's struggling. I don't know. You keep on. Let me allow Honorable Raiso to come in. While we're Honorable Tobias, we're trying to.
Okay, may I proceed, Chair?
Please proceed, Honorable Raiso.
Okay, sorry. Thank you very much, Chair. This mute and mute thing has defocused us. thank you very much, Chair, and also thank the presenters from the Department of Treasury led by Dr. Mampo and the team. Chair, I've got just a few questions here to start with. It's on slide 16. I just want to get an understanding on the Department of Defense, because there is also an understanding that there are supernumerary staff, if I'm correct, that are being referred to here, and this also contribute towards ballooning the compensation of employees. We may perhaps get this report in future, because there is no solution as to how the department then intends to deal with this matter. Otherwise, we'll get the same report in the next quarterly report from Treasury. Let me go to ESCOM. On debt relief, on ESCOM condition on debt relief, the issue of salaries, wage increase, let me also combine it with SAPO, because even if we're not dealing with the state-owned enterprise, but I do have a sense that SAPO may follow the same pattern as ESCOM. So that bullet number 8 on the conditions makes reference to issues of bargaining. As well as SAPO, I do have a sense it is also being brought into this committee. So this may create a problem for this committee if we can then somehow go into bargaining forum issues and bring them here at the level of this committee. So my proposal is that that condition has to be reviewed and be referred to the relevant platform, where it will be dealt with by relevant parties in that particular platform. Okay, on Transnet performance, I think it's it is a history we've been receiving that Transnet has been declining in terms of performance. I'm not sure, maybe there's a problem where when it comes to performance plan review process there, which are supposed to identify weakness and come up with a proper mechanism at that level. So as they have been approved continuously, despite the fact of the performance of the Transnet as an entity. So in short, those are my just few questions that I wanted to get clarity from Treasurer. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Taiso. Honorable Tobias, please come in. Hey, Mashile, Umenzani.
I have allowed Honorable Tobias to unmute yourself. I'm not sure what's really happening in here. Because the minute I try to unmute her, it blocks her again.
Okay.
But anyway, is it possible that we can have the question written?
Okay. In the chat? Let's interact with Honorable Tobias.
Okay. Tobias, yes.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. I've got Honorable Tlangwini, who's also asking us to pose the question to the presenters. The question is about the grant that has been put on hold on Nelson Mandela due to the alleged corrupt city manager. So the question is, what processes have National Treasury put on place than just to hold grants to these municipalities that will finally end up leading to the recipients or the people that are supposed to be recipients of the services and not receiving those services because of something which is happening in the administration? So how do we deal with that negative impact? Are there things that we are doing at the moment to try and make sure that the people who are supposed to receive these services don't suffer from what is happening in administration? I think you get the gist of the meeting, of the question. And then I also have got a question from Honorable Nkwankwa. It's about renewables. That from the look of things, that ESCOM, in fact, that's what has been, ESCOM is not allowed to invest in renewables. Yet that's the path that we are taking. Don't we see that as locking ESCOM perpetually to be dependent on the private sector for renewables? What is the logic behind this thing? This is the future, is the renewables, yet ESCOM is being barred from investing in the renewables. What will your comment be? The second question is that the separation of the three companies on ESCOM. The hypothesis is that will lead to weak balance sheets for different for those three entities. What are we putting in place to make sure that that doesn't happen? Or don't you see that eventuality, which will finally lead again to the three of them? I think it's related to the question which was raised by Oram Lenzan. Don't you see again now you're having three entities coming to this committee, coming to parliament, wanting to be paid out on these things? So that those are the questions which came from Honorable Nkwankwa. I think the SAA one was also there. It has been raised by Honorable Sheikh Imam. Then coming to my questions, let me start by making this input, just to thank all of you presenters, that's one, but two, again, to recognize the improvement that
Dr. Mampo spoke about as far as spending is concerned, right? For instance, we have got underspending of 3.2% if you look at the first quarter of this year compared to the first quarter of last year, right? And that is if you compare with 2020-21, which was 18.1% and 15.5% in 2020 before that. So it's very important that we're having this huge improvement in underspending. I think for me, and again, if you look at the improvement in capital expenditure from 46% underspending to 17.9% underspending, I think that's it's something that we should note. And again, it also shows the role that this committee has played in as far as overseeing this thing. It became a very major thing, I think, in our term in this sixth administration, the question of underspending by departments. This is a necessary condition. It may not be a sufficient one, because as Honorable Sheikh is saying that, okay, spending is one thing, but are we getting value for money? Are we getting the services that we spend money on? Are we getting value for money for that and so on? So these are other things that we should be looking at. But I think the improvement that we have been focusing on as the committee should be noted, and I'm sure National Treasury you played a big role in ensuring that with the departments you get this type of improvement. Again, especially when it comes to capital expenditure, I think we'll note that. Then coming to my question. Yeah, there is this thing that let's also note, National Treasury, that there's a lot to be done as far as our budgeting is concerned, right? And when you explain to Dr. Mampo, you keep on saying there are some glitches and so on. So for me, and these things, they go to the next quarter. So perhaps the question that I would like to ask is that what is the impact of that on service delivery? Because they should be to understand the impact of that. you have got other departments which have got huge underspending. You mentioned them, right? It's science and technology, human settlements, amongst others. So the question is there any way of before the end of the term or of the quarter that on an ongoing basis you monitor, are they doing what they said they'll be doing, so that we don't get surprised at the end of the quarter that no, again, there are reasons that there's no expenditure and so on, to see that what they promised is being implemented. I don't understand. Okay, again, CAF and agriculture and land reform. This grant has been there forever, but you seem again to be having a problem as far as spending this grant. Exactly what is the problem? I think that's what I want to know. And again, what's the impact on the farmers, especially the emerging farmers who benefit from this type of a grant? And I think we should also, we had water and sanitation here, and we had the minister and the deputy ministers and the DG and the whole department appearing before us. And they told us about a lot of interventions that they were making. We had been worried about under expenditure in that department because of the importance of water. But I think we need to recognize the huge improvement that has happened, which means that the minister is implementing what he promised us he was going to implement. On the compensation.
Yeah, now I have.
Okay. Just hold it there, Honorable Tobias. I'll allow you now because we can hear you very well. And then there's a surplus on compensation fund. I just wanted to know why surplus. I didn't get the reason there. Why are we having a surplus on compensation fund?
And then the surplus on National Health Laboratories, what is the impact on service delivery as far as that is concerned? Then there's also a surplus on NSFAS. Again, it's a worry. And can we be assured that all the students who are supposed to receive NSFAS have received them since we're having a surplus here? Perhaps put the question differently. What is the impact on the people who are supposed to receive this on when we have got surplus on NSFAS? Yeah, I would leave it at that and allow Honorable Tobias to come in. Please, Honorable Tobias, come in.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair, and good morning.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Chair, I heard your brief earlier on, and please pardon me if I have not followed the brief, because the challenge is, you know, there's a difference between a Boeing and a helicopter. If you get a document a day before the meeting, you will have a helicopter approach to the discussions, because the engines of the Boeing get started very early for it to take flight. Chair, let me start with the post office. Chair, we approved the business rescue that was put in place for the post office. But what is mind-boggling is that today we are told that since the time we approved this, what needs to happen for them to be able to do their work is to establish a task team. Now I want to know from the team, Bante, how long does it take to establish a task team? Since we approved their budget till now, many, many months later, just a task team. Maybe they will explain. Maybe it takes 6 months, 10 months or so. Second is the issue of denial. They say there is a delay in the implementations of the plans, but it's not stated as to why they are lagging behind in terms of reaching their revenue targets. Maybe there's a reason. And if you look at their priorities, they've prioritized restructuring in relation to recapitalization as opposed to the targets that they needed to put. Maybe there's a reason. If you need to prioritize a turnaround strategy, you can't start with restructuring. You'll start with a turnaround strategy, and then restructuring will be part of what you do. Perhaps there's an explanation. But lastly, which is a comment to ESCOM, I think you have arrived at a point where you need to prepare yourself for conversion to equity with the state, since the current guarantees has been taken off, because it is clear that you won't be able on your own to do anything except to maintain the loans and continue it and the processes of distribution. So I would want them to comment on that. Thank you very much, Chair. I apologize for not dealing with the rents and friends. Thank you.
It's okay. Thank you, Honorable Tobias. I think the point, Treasury, which was made is to when we receive the document, as you can see, your documents are quite voluminous. So I think it's important that we give oral members enough time to read your documents. Dr. Mampo, please come in and with your team. Dr. Mampo, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Chairperson. Let me ask the Chief Directors to start, and then I will conclude, then we head to ALM.
Just to remind everybody that we request that your videos be on, not unless you have got a serious challenge of connectivity.
Lebo, please start.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Mampo. Regarding the first question of DSI, you know, the flow spending and how we should address it going forward so that in the next quarter, we don't see the same picture. Definitely, Chair, our intention is to continue to do the monitoring on a very regular basis. Last year, what happened is that we allocated funds to the department under the BFI, Budget Facility for Infrastructure. And the delay in the implementation of funds was because of there were conditions that were put on the allocation letter. For instance, the funds needed to be dispersed according to the construction schedule, amongst others. So the department is trying to finalize those conditions. Therefore, implementation is expected to start anytime soon. We had a meeting with them in the previous quarter to discuss this when we were visiting one of their sites. And the commitment that we received from the department is that everything is in place and they should be starting with the implementation of the funds. And we believe that, amongst others, this should translate in terms of fast-track spending of funds. That will mean that this underspending that we are seeing, amongst other issues that are triggering, it should be improved in the next quarter. On the issue of the CASP, you know, the issue of CASP and its implication on the farmers. CASP is an indirect grant that is administered by the National Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and it is transferred to the provinces. What happens is that the provinces will submit business plans to the National Department, who will review those business plans and disperse the money accordingly. So CASP support farmers with infrastructure tools, for instance, the JoJo tanks, some of the tools of trade, when they want to pursue their farming activities. So definitely, if the provinces are delaying, there's going to be impact on the agriculture activity. The farmer support is going to be subdued, and to a large extent, the issue of food security could be delayed. But definitely, as part of the monitoring and the feedback after this meeting, going back to the department to say that how do we improve the spending, the issue of the business plans, how do we make sure that we put it in such a way that when the province submits, it does not affect the spending reporting, that in such a way that when we come back to the forum, at least spending by that time could have been triggered up and addressed. So definitely it will be part of our monitoring, and we've been embarking on that and doing so in any case, that we have to improve spending. We have established an agriculture coordination forum 10 by 10, where we're engaging with the provinces to address, amongst others, the issue of farmer support and the conditional grants, CASP among others, so that through that forum, constraints such as this one are elevated into that forum and are addressed together with the province in one meeting. That 10 by 10 is chaired by the National Treasury together with the National Department of Agriculture. Thank you very much, Chair.
So, Chair, good morning, and good morning, Honourable Members. So I'll answer the questions in relation to transport and human settlement. So let's start with TASA and what's happening in TASA. So we're cautiously optimistic. TRASA is the first step, I suppose, to kind of seeing how TRASA is implementing its turnaround, is in relation to its ability to spend its capital budget. And for the first time in about 7 years, TRASA has spent within 80% of its capital budget. So it's a good sign. And what they are doing right now is they are implementing their turnaround on a corridor by corridor basis. So the priorities are the high volume of corridors. This includes the Mabopane line, the central line in Cape Town that they're working quite hard on. The difficulties around the central line include having to remove 5,000 households who are living on the rail reserve. And it's those kind of projects. And once they are able to restore the kind of the capital investments that is required, I mean, post-COVID, TRASA has kind of had been suffering in relation to severe vandalism on its network. This includes the purways, the overhead traction systems, the signaling systems that have been vandalized and stolen, including the electrical that makes everything work within stations. So a massive capital program is what TRASA needs to undergo. It is expensive trying to restore all of this. How do we check for value for money in relation to this? The first step would be, once all of these capital investments are made, is that we ensure that they are not vandalized or stolen again. So it's how do we protect those assets? And most importantly, the reason why we're doing all of this is so that we are able to get passengers back onto the rail service. Now, one of the things in Mampo's table that maybe we didn't pay too much attention to is what's happening on the fare revenue side, so on the sales side and fare revenue. And we're seeing that fare revenue continues to underperform. And that underperformance on there is saying that people are not coming back onto the railway services as fast as we hope. So, Honorable Sheikh Imam, how are we measuring the ultimate value that we're getting out of this? Is that if we're able to get riders back into the system? I mean, we are not doing this CapEx program and the revitalization of these corridors for the sake of just kind of CapEx investments. We are doing this because we want to provide a reliable and safe service, and that's really the ultimate objective. And once we have enough data to kind of check how this is working on, if we'll be able to assess whether we're getting good value out of the investments that we are making. To Honorable Matapa, what lessons are there for others in all of this? I mean, we had almost no role to play in this, I want to say, because the responsibility around all of this and the experts that's within CASA, we were just trying to understand what were they doing from a budgeting point of view and whether that made sense in how they approached it and how you then prioritize so that you were able to get to reduce the operational deficits. A lot of this has to probably go to the relatively new CEO of CASA, who was appointed about a year ago, and a new management team with a commitment to wanting to turn this around. And doing that, so getting a viable, financially viable turnaround plan, and one that is realistic. So, you know, we weren't in a position with CASA where they came to us with a turnaround plan that wasn't unfundable. We were quite clear that whatever we do here would have to be within existing baselines, because that would make it implementable. And that kind of realism, I suppose, helps around understanding what is really on how they approach the turnaround, and by looking at this from a corridor by corridor point of view, as opposed to trying to do a little bit on the entire network, that wouldn't then give them or they would only see marginal benefits as opposed to kind of seeing big impacts on some of those lines. In relation to Honorable Sheikh Imam's question on the road accident fund, so I mean there's a couple of problems that we have. I suppose the first big one is a policy problem. Cabinet approved the Road Accident Benefit Scheme policy in 2011. The legislation to implement all of that was rejected by Parliament in 2020, 2021, somewhere around there. And we have to kind of come back around understanding whether the policy position that is being proposed on the back of the Road Accident Fund Commission recommendations is still fit for purpose. One of the things that the Road Accident Fund is focusing on right now is around its operational efficiencies and understanding what that is, so that you are able to standardize a whole range of business processes so that claims can be made. So yes, we do acknowledge that there's a backlog that sits at the Road Accident Fund, a whole range of, I think they're working quite hard on making the operational changes that would hopefully allow us to see claims payments being finalized a lot quicker than what it currently is. Then just to Honorable Tobias's question around SAPO, its business rescue and the turnaround around SAPO. So this task team that George referred to is really just an oversight committee. One of the things we had asked the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies is that we be part of their oversight responsibilities. As you know, the responsibilities around all of this in Section 38 of the PFMA lies with the DCDT, and all we were asking for them is for us to be a part of it. It doesn't mean that the oversight doesn't happen. It just means that we want to play a different kind of role than what we normally play, given our responsibilities in the PFMA. To just understanding what's happening in SAPO from their point of view, as opposed to us only getting reports from the DCDT, given their kind of transferring officer responsibilities that we have. Then just to the chairperson's question or comment around human settlements. So the underspending or the lower than projected spending in human settlements was mostly on the conditional grants, and these are conditional allocations and conditional transfers that the national department makes to provinces. This in no way is a reflection of actual spending on these conditional grants. So the withholding of the informal settlements upgrading partnership grant just means that the provinces haven't also spent the money. It just means that the money hasn't been transferred because specific conditions within the Division of Revenue Act have not been met. In this case, those provinces' business plans were not approved by the department, as one of the conditions for the first tranche is that they approved because of deficiencies within the planning framework. So deficiencies on the side of what provinces were saying they were going to do with the money that the department first wanted them to rectify before they make the transfers. We do know that these business plans were approved in July and that those tranches were then made to provinces. The actual spending of that from provinces, we report separately on conditional grants, and that's really where the delivery happens. So this is really just a transfer mechanism, which may not necessarily translate into the same kind of expenditure outcomes or delivery outcomes that we expect because of this additional step that we have in the system. I think that's all for me. Thanks.
Good morning, honourable members and honourable chairperson. I'm just responding to the question on public works in terms of the moratorium of filling vacant positions. This was instituted and implemented by the new minister, and the moratorium was lifted at the end of June this year. It will definitely have an impact on the service delivery of the department and also from the PMTE, but we can provide the committee with more information with regard to that. That's all. Thanks. Honourable Chairperson.
Morning, Honourable Chair and committee members. You asked two questions on the Compensation Fund and NISFAS. So for the Compensation Fund to have a surplus of roughly over 6 billion, it was on both sides of the equation. They got in more revenue than they had anticipated, and that was because the first 2 months of the new financial year, that 2022-23, were overlapped with the assessment levies of the previous year, and they also had more employees registered to pay the assessment levy for the compensation fund. So on the expenditure side, they got in more than they anticipated. And on the spending side, they paid less claims than they had anticipated. And you understand how the comp fund works. It's for injuries on duty. So there's quite a process to map the medical reports with medical codes, and there are lots of things that need to be done there. There were some glitches, codes, so people got rejected when they shouldn't have been rejected. The IT department is looking into that and sorting that out. They told us they would sort that out in June, but they paid less claims. So they got in more revenue and they paid less claims. That's how they land up with the surplus. So that's the comp fund. For NISFAS, they got in less revenue than they anticipated. Remember, Chair, NISFAS is still running the loan scheme. So students that were given the loan bursary, let's say 10 years ago, are still paying back the loan part. So they should have got in 1.5 billion. They expected, but they didn't. So on that side, they were down. But on the spending side, they made less transfers than they should have in terms of universities and TVET colleges. On the university side, it was because there were delays in the claims that the universities submitted for those bursary payments. And in the TVET colleges, they got in lower claims than they had anticipated. So that was 3.5 billion. So the offset there was 1.5 more or less revenue, but 3.5 less expenditure, and that set off. So they land up with a surplus of 1.5 billion. My assumption is that they are trying to deal with making sure that the correct student gets their bursary and allowances at the correct amount at the correct time. So maybe the chair would like to ask them to come and explain whether all the students have been paid, because they have had an SIU investigation ongoing for students that should not have received the bursary amount. Thanks.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. It's Mark Letcher speaking. I didn't quite get the question on National Health Laboratory Service, but I'll try and explain a bit about it. So the NHLS was virtually insolvent around 5, 6, 7 years ago. There were a lot of problems at that stage. There was a major turnaround in the management and the controls and systems, and they've been doing progressively very well overall. In the current year, they've only had a 2% tariff increase. That's way below inflation. And also the last year or two, they've had a below tariff increases. At the same time, they've increased their test volumes from 106 million tests to 110 million tests. They've taken over the forensic chemistry laboratories from the National Department of Health, which had big backlogs, and they've been substantially turning that around and modernizing the lab, the capital project. They're cross-subsidizing the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, which played a key role in the COVID pandemic and other kinds of infectious diseases, and the National Institute of Occupational Health. They almost, through their own funding sources, almost doubled the revenue to those public health institutions. They've been able to both increase their revenue but control tightly their expenditure. They've had difficult wage negotiations. They've actually decreased personnel numbers from 8,300 to 8,100. And so they've been able to achieve fairly substantial surpluses, which have helped to stabilize the organization. So generally, we're very pleased with their progress. It's not to say that any organization doesn't have issues, but they really have turned around the organization over the past 5 years. Back to you, Chairperson. Back to you, next colleague.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Now we can hear you. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Beniti, the focus of the presentation, unfortunately, was on the department that were outliers that showed higher than projected spending, others that showed lower than projected spending. But if you look at the rest of the departments, this department basically spent as per the projection. So for this year, the spending has been significantly better than in other years, Chairperson. And I think that's the first thing that I wanted to highlight, is that because of the timeline, we usually tend to focus on the outliers. But to be fair, on the rest of the departments that were not in the presentation, it means that their spending was aligned to the projection, which is a very good story. In terms of the question on capital spending, the way we monitor the capital expenditure, we monitor it per item, we monitor it per department, and with our in-year monitoring systems that we have, we always speak to departments monthly when we pick up that their spending is not as planned, but we do speak to the department and we do monitor the spending. I think what we have been doing in the budget is to protect infrastructure spending or capital spending, and hopefully that will yield the results that we are looking for as government. But yes, we do monitor
that spending quite closely. In terms of the zero-based budgeting, Chairperson and Honourable Members, what we did was we commissioned GTEC to assist us with the spending reviews, and we have finalised the spending reviews. We looked at over 200 programs that we analysed, and those results, part of them have been implemented by the different departments, and part of it, or some of those recommendations, have been presented in Cabinet and they have been presented in FOSAD. So the departments are already asked to implement most of the findings that we have. So that work has been done, and part of that work has been implemented by departments, and Cabinet is just finalizing. The President gave us an instruction that we need to work as Treasury, work with departments to implement it. So that work is progressing. And then another one, I think the one where the reason for the underspending for poor planning. I think, Chairperson and Honourable Members, when we start every fiscal year, the departments tend to take a bit long to finalise their processes. And I think as the Treasury, we need to work with them closely just to help them with the planning so that the first quarter is not impacted by the slow spend and by the slow planning. However, in last year, Honourable Members, regarding the fiscal dumping, what we did was we basically worked with departments earlier on in the year, and most of the adjustments that they needed to do were done during the adjustments budget, and we reduce the requirements that are required at the end of the financial year. So even for this time around, we will be working with departments to make sure that if there are any adjustments that needs to be done, they are done during the course of the year to avoid what we refer to as a mic spike, which can translate to fiscal dumping. Chairperson, that's it from Public Finance. Can I ask the colleagues from ALM to respond to the questions on state-owned companies? And the colleagues from IGR, I see Wendy's on the call, to respond to the municipalities and the performance of the municipalities. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Modisa, and thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for the comments. They were very useful. I think before I get the team to respond on the specific state-owned companies, I think just some broad, some broad overview comments. Chair?
Want to see you.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry about that. Can you see me now? Yeah. Okay. So Chair, just some overall broad comments.
Can you close your curtain behind you? Okay, that's better. But there's we are in reflection of the sun more than you.
Okay. There we go. That's better. Yeah. Okay. Chair, I think just some of the overall comments. I think just leading from the advice that you provided at the beginning of the meeting, I don't think we will be able to get into some of the details, around the technicalities in terms of the question posed. But I think just in terms of, ESCOM, what we can advise, the honorable members is that the work that has been going on or has been concluded now with BGBE in terms of the independent assessment, I think that work, which, hopefully we will share, in the next meeting, because we're busy with the closeout report with the various stations, that will share some of the insight in terms of what, are some of the issues or, the matters that can be addressed in terms of improving the EAF and also in terms of what can be done in terms of, the various power stations. So I think that work will be quite important. In terms of just informing how we can use, the findings from that operational assessment to then, advise in terms of how we take some of the matters forward, especially around EAF and some of the other, matters. Chair, I think in terms of the questions that were also raised just around, the conditions, I think there were some, questions around the conditions for the post office and I think ESCOM, in terms of the, remuneration adjustments. I think what's important from an ESCOM point of view, we are not, dictating what the, what the increases or the adjustments should be, but what we are saying in the conditions is that that they can implement the adjustments. However, they must do so in a prudent way where it doesn't come back to the fiscus for any further support. So if they are implementing these increases, that they must find the savings internally so that there's no further comebacks in terms of any support to, you know, to augment, the internal funds that they may have to fund the increase. So I think that's quite important. I think for the post office as well, I think here as well, while it's under business rescue, I think we would need to then look at what the business rescue practitioner will then recommend or advise in terms of how do we deal with the, you know, with the increases or the remuneration adjustments as well. I think just from the question that Honorable Nkwanka posed as well, in terms of the fact that we're not allowing, you know, Eskom to invest into new projects or to into renewables. I think as Jeff has outlined in terms of the conditions, we have provided for the fact that if Eskom is in a position to invest into new generation projects, then that will have to be done with the approval of the Minister of Finance. So we have, in a way, opened that door, but obviously with the approval of the Minister of Finance so that we can ensure that they have sufficient funds to actually fund these new greenfield, projects. I think the other question that I just wanted to answer from a broad point of view is just around the unbundling process and the fact that there could be further appropriations or whether there will be further appropriations with the three entities. I think what's clear from our side as the Treasury in terms of the support package is that the 254 billion takes into account the fact that, you know, that Eskom will, then execute, the whole unbundling process. There's no further support that will be required from the fiscus for the unbundling process. In fact, you know, Eskom has gone through a process of or are going through a process of engaging the lenders in terms of how the unbundled entities will take shape and, you know, and the form thereof, and how the existing debt will then be apportioned to the entities. So, I think from my point of view, I just wanted to address those broad comments. And then maybe let me just ask Lefenze and then Jeff and then Tato and George and Colin just to come in on the specifics around the questions around their entities. But I think from a land bank point of view, I think that's where we can get into some of the details. But maybe let me just hand over to Lefenze and the team can come in that order just to respond to the questions that were posed by the honorable members. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Ravesh. There were two questions asked about the land bank. What is land bank doing now in terms of its operations? Honourable member, what land bank is doing now is very little when it comes to on the commercial side. You remember that land bank does not have enough funds to actually own land. They rely mainly on lending. And then the part of the 3.5 that they would receive from National Treasury in terms of recapitalization for the blended finance, it's currently sitting in an Excel account, mainly because we are waiting for lending to meet some of the equity conditions regarding that. But more than any other thing, it's more of protecting that money from being actually taken away by the lender in any form of a liquidation or any other form of actually getting the money back from the lenders. So what land bank is actually doing is simple terms is just blended finance and very little on commercial lending. And then the report that we got from them is that they are beginning to upscale that blended finance lending. The second question, which is the last, is the 5 billion, whether there are equity conditions. Yes, there are equity conditions given. Hence, you see that money sitting in an extra account as a way of actually protecting it. And then we are monitoring the performance of that on a monthly basis. Land Bank is actually giving us monthly report in terms of the situation with regards to the money and also with regards to
how it's actually performing with regards to its mandate-related activities and on, also on the liability solution part. Thanks. Thanks, Chair. And fellow members. Thanks, Ravesh.
Thanks, Professor Chief.
Thanks, Ravesh, and thanks, honourable members. If I may take questions that have been raised, particularly in relation to ESCOM, if I may start with honourable Mlenz on his questions. The challenge around EAF, there are a number of factors that contribute to the EAF not performing as expected. But what we have picked up is that with the VGBE consortium's work that they've been doing, is they have been able to actually, in discussions with the stations, be able to identify measures that will be required to actually deal decisively with the improvement in the EAF, and the stations themselves have actually agreed to the findings. So if the findings are actually implemented as recommended, we are actually likely to see a huge improvement in the EAF. What is also positive is that with the intervention through the ESCOM Debt Relief Act, ESCOM has been able now to actually release funds in advance for maintenance, and that will actually also contribute positively to the improvement in the EAF. So yes, there is a hope that if all is implemented accordingly, we will see a huge improvement in the EAF. The second question around the unbundling and the separate appropriation around these entities, I think, as Ravesh has said, we are not anticipating any request. And I think that question links to what Honorable Gwangwa actually raised around the weaker balance sheet of these entities. So these entities are envisaged as contained in the ESCOM roadmap of the DPE to be subsidiaries of the holdings company. So the debt will be, as envisaged for now, will be split among these entities, but only through the intercompany loans. The debt will still be sitting at the holdings. So the interventions that has actually been put in place will still cover. So they will not be trading as separate independent entities, but still will be contained under the holdings company and be separate, just be subsidiaries of these entities. Of the holdings co. So you are not anticipating that they would be coming separately for further recaps as well as any appropriation in this regard. With regards to the disposal, as we make reference in the conditions, our understanding of the disposal is in relation to non-co, and that is only those assets that are not in core to the generation, transmission, and distribution of the electricity, and that is the ESCOM finance company, which is a long-standing cabinet-approved decision that ESCOM has been seized with. Another one is around the property that has been built around Yokosile, which has never been used. So that is in relation to those. And in the conditions, we make reference to the fact that all those net proceeds will actually be used to actually deal with the reduction of the or towards the relief. The other question that was raised by Honorable Shuruping is around the reduction of the ESCOM debt relief in relation to the OCGT spend. The debt relief is not related to the OCGT spend. All the OCGT expense that ESCOM is incurring is funded via their own internally generated revenues through the tariff, and also they are in savings that they are making. There is no money that has been allocated for the diesel spend. They are funding it from their own internally generated revenues. The other question I think Ravesh did actually respond to was from Honorable Gwangwa around the renewables. What we are seeking to achieve with this debt relief arrangement is to assist ESCOM to improve its balance sheet. So the restrictions really relates to the next 3 years. Outer years, when the balance sheet has been improved, ESCOM will be able to invest in CAPEX. But what we're saying now is that ESCOM should not be investing in CAPEX, because it will certainly undermine what we're trying to achieve, because at this stage, Eskom will not be able to raise any funding without government support. So we are trying to limit that so that when we are actually out of this period, Eskom will be able to then fund all its generation projects that they will be undertaking without coming back to the fiscus to request either guarantees or further equity injection. With regards to the question that Honorable Kaiso raised around the bargaining issues, the conditions here are not seeking to take away the power of the bargaining process. In fact, as Ravesh is saying, is that we are just cautioning that whatever adjustment that are made should take into account the financial sustainability of the entity so that they do not come back again and seek another recap to fund the salaries and wages. So what we are just saying is that whatever adjustment that they are taking, they must also look into the financial sustainability of the entity. I think the last question, Honorable Chair, is what the comment that was raised by Honorable Tobias around the conversion. The conversion of the loan will depend on Eskom's compliance with the condition as set out. We have removed the guarantees on the basis that Eskom is no longer going to be borrowing. So the conversion will be sitting with Eskom on a quarterly basis, as we've alluded to, and then see whether they are complying with the conditions. And when they do comply with the conditions, the portion for that quarter will be converted. Failure to do that, as I said earlier, then it will attract interest at the end of the term. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Mr. Masenia?
Thanks, Ravesh. There were two questions in relation to SAA slash Mango. The first one relating to Mango, it was around when it was placed in business rescue and how long has it been there. The committee members will remember that from the last time we appeared before the committee, we indicated that Mango was placed under business rescue in August of 2021. However, the airline exceeded the target exit time, which was May of 2022. At the time, the engagements indicated that the business rescue petitioner was focusing on securing a strategic equity partner for the airline. And subsequent to that, the National Treasury received a Section 54 application for SAA to make a 100% shareholding disposal in Mango. As we are engaging with SAA and trying to prepare a response at that time, we learned that the business rescue petitioner had actually brought a litigation against the Minister of Public Enterprises and others, and the matter appeared before court and judgment was reserved therein. So that is where we are in terms of the Mango business rescue process. On SAA, the question from Honorable Sheikh Imam was that how much were the aircraft that were previously owned by SAA sold for? What we know is that was done at various stages of the airline's life, and what we can commit to do for the committee is revert to SAA and the Department of Public Enterprise so that they can give us a comprehensive breakdown in terms of the stages where SAA disposed of its owned aircraft. Yeah, but normally the disposal of aircraft would follow a situation whereby the aircraft are reaching their end of life and they're becoming outdated and obsolete in nature. So in most cases, that what necessitates the disposal of some of those aircraft. Thank you.
Thanks, Tato. George, you want to come in and then maybe Colin?
Thanks, Ravesh.
two questions were raised on post office. I think the first question on the condition on the salary increases was fairly answered by my colleagues, but that's what it is. The condition is not an imposition on the company to sort of force them to not engage on bargaining council meetings to do that. It's certainly just to hold them to what their turnaround plan has outlined to be. Because in the turnaround plan, it's all capital in nature and some of the creditors, but not necessarily paying off salary increases. And yes, it's solely to focus on the turnaround plan. And then the other question was about the task team taking maybe a little bit long to establish. Like my other colleague had said, there is an ongoing monitoring in place, and at this point we were awaiting the work of the appointed business rescue practitioner to just take a similar team, or at least Treasury and the CDT, people that still work on post office, to be on that same team. But as of the rest of the question, I think I'll defer to the department as to the length of why it took so long. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, George. Maybe Colin on Danelle. Thanks.
No, thank you, Ravesh. I think with regard to Danelle, there were two questions. And then the first question was, why the delay in the implementation of the turnaround plan? Maybe let me start by giving a bit of a background. The turnaround plan had a funding requirement of 5.2 billion, of which government have provided 3.4 billion. And then the DNL led to come up with the 1.8 billion in terms of self-help initiative. So, indeed, we have witnessed a delay in terms of the sale of non-core assets, and this has been due to various reasons. Some are external reasons, or external reasons beyond the NEL, as we know that it becomes difficult sometimes to sell properties, and then looking at the current economic conditions which we find ourselves in as a country. And then some of the delays, I think they were also due to misalignment between key stakeholders. But I think in this regard, DPE, DNL, AMSCO, they are finalizing the MOC, a Memorandum of Cooperation, which will ensure that there is alignment in terms of the sale of those non-core assets. And then they also experience issues where the preferred bidders, they couldn't raise the required amount, and then now they have to look at other bidders. So those are some of the reasons which have led to the delay in terms of the implementation of the turnaround plan. And I think the second question was, why is DNL prioritizing restructuring and not the turnaround plan? Maybe let me emphasize that the turnaround plan identifies various initiatives which the entity has to undertake. This includes restructuring in terms of downsizing, consolidating core capabilities, and also the sale of non-core assets. And then the ultimate aim of this initiative is to create a more streamlined and effective organization that is better equipped to navigate challenges and seize opportunities. Thank you, Ravesh.
Thanks, Colin. We now hand over to Wendy. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And I'll deal with the municipal questions posed. And maybe after we deal with the issues with regard to municipal debt, and I assume you're referring to the debt that municipalities owing to ESCOM and water boards and the like, and corruption, and also how do we monitor the performance in municipalities. So what is quite important with regard to municipal debt management? And one of the key things why municipalities are not paying debt is because they're not budgeting for it. So one of the key tools that we first need to look at is when municipalities start preparing for their budgets. So what we do is we've got what we refer to as non-delegated municipalities, where National Treasury monitors municipalities directly. Then there's the delegated municipalities where provincial treasuries monitor the budget. So the first step that we need to look at and to ensure that municipalities pay their debt is then to ensure that sufficient provision is made in the municipal budget for that. So when we do the municipal budget monitoring process before they conclude their budgets, municipalities are required to submit their budgets to National Treasury and provincial treasuries, where we will then look if the budgets are credible. And one of those things that we will be determining if a budget is credible is whether that provision is made. So that is the first step. What we also do is during the year, we would, and the same is done by provincial treasuries, what we do is mid-year visits, where we actually go into the field, visit the municipalities, and monitor whether projects are on stream and whether the budget that was expressed in the beginning of their financial year is actually given an expression to. So that's another monitoring tool that we've got in place to see that the right things are being done. And then with regard to the quarterly monitoring, we do request municipalities, and it's compulsory, they don't have a choice, to report the expenditure to us on a quarterly basis. Of course, we will monitor that as well. And if we pick up any discrepancies, that we will take action. If we do pick up any corruption in municipalities, we will take the appropriate action and we will investigate and take corrective actions where necessary. And some of those corrective actions have been reported in the newspapers, for example, where certain conditional grants have been withheld until appropriate corrections are done. We do know that currently the performance of municipalities are a challenging field, we have processes in place, and we continue enhancing it as well. We're working also with DCOC to undertake interventions in municipalities in a much more cohesive and coordinated manner. Thanks.
NT, Mr. Sojaru, are you done?
Yes, Chairperson, we are done. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the responses that we have given to the questions posed by the audience. Yes.
There's a hand from Honorable Sheikh Imam on Honorable Price. I'm not sure if it's an old hand or not, but you can confirm.
Chair, it's a new hand.
A new hand, yes.
Yes. Right. Say quickly. Honorable Sheikh.
Yeah, Chair, two things very quickly. Chair, I'm not sure if the last statement is correct, that we need to be looking at increasing budget for municipalities. They're buying electricity, they're making a profit, and they're selling. It's a business transaction. Now, if they don't pay, but they're receiving the money, and we're going to give them more money, I think we are setting the wrong precedent. But be that, I want to come back to SA. I'm very disappointed that the custodians of the assets of this country can't give you direct answers. And this game that's been played all over, Chair, is going on for a long time. We just can't get the answers. I see what my colleague there from Treasury says something about it might be outdated or perhaps out of use It's not the case, Chair. Remember, SAA Technical also is a state-owned company who maintains these things. The very same aircraft that was sold was the very same aircraft we leased back. It was okay to lease it, but it was not okay to own it. So I'm not satisfied with the experience, but for some reason or the other, there's a reluctance of giving us the exact information that is as far as the sale of SAA fleet of 14 aircraft. And I'm pleading that National Treasury comes back and give us a comprehensive report on why was it sold, give us a report, what technical assessment was done? What about SAE Technical that actually maintains them? What was the value of the sale? What about the objectivity that I'm told the CEO sold it to a company that he has an interest in, which is SEFE, which today has got the monopoly in the airspace in South Africa while Mango is suffering? All this put together, something doesn't look like Chairperson, but we're not getting those answers. And lastly, I wanted to know from National Treasury, what is the process? They didn't answer that. That if you're the custodian, is it just the board that decides to dispose of? Is there no higher authority? Is it not cabinet? Somebody that must get involved in the sale of the state-owned entity over and above, you know, the boards and things. They're not giving us that answer either. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. Honorable Kaiso,
thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure whether, I don't know what Treasury is up to around the issue that has been, you know, inscribed after conditions above on ESCOM to talk about cautions on salaries. So the subheading there is conditions. So I'm saying that this is not new. Treasury had brought this previously, and we said that should be removed and be referred to relevant structures. So I don't know what is the intention that an issue which falls under a different act is being brought here, that is salaries cautions. So salary cautions goes to relevant bargaining chamber. So when you put it at this committee level, you are binding us on that arrangement under that condition. So that's the condition that one is proposing, that it should be removed and be put at a relevant area. We're not saying ESCOM should not talk about it here. I mean, talk about it. It can talk about it, but at a relevant platform level, because indirectly it binds the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Team Treasury, any responses? Rajesh? Rajesh?
Chair, from my side, I think what we can do, I think on SAA, I think it would be best if the shareholder department can respond on the SAA comprehensive questions. I think what we can do is once we get that information, we can at some stage respond. But I think it's, you know, only fair, as you said at the beginning of the meeting, that those you know, technical questions on SAA really be answered by the department as the shareholder of SAA. Chair, I think that's all from my side. Thank you.
Okay. Defense on conditions, stroke, wages, salaries, you want to respond because it talks about ESCOM?
Chair,
yes, 100%.
Okay, Jeff, go for it, Jeff.
Chair, I think we note what Honorable Kaiso is raising around this condition. We will go back and internally discuss what has been raised. But we must just register that our intention was never to bind the committee, neither is it to take away the power of the bargaining council. What you're saying in this is just ESCOM must take into account that they must look into their financial position when they make this adjustment. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I let you go, Tato, you spoke about the litigation by the business rescue around Mango. What's happening? What is the litigation about? That's one. And my other comment, as I close, Ulrich and Wendy, the question of conditional grants and what's happening in the municipalities, right? the question of whether the province or the municipality not meeting the conditions, it's a perennial problem and seems to be year in, year out, quarter in, quarter out. But what concerns us that at the end of the day, when this doesn't happen, although Parliament would have allocated money and so on, people who are supposed to receive that service are not receiving that service because of some administrative things between and amongst different spheres of government. We are a unitary state. We are not a confederation. I know that we have got some responsibilities. What stops us, for instance, of, let's say, Municipality A is not compliant and so on? What stops us from getting those people and the department involved? I'm not saying National Treasury should do that. I'm just saying the department, let's take CASP, for instance. What stops the Department of Agriculture to get that department, I mean, that municipality of the province, I mean, the province when it comes to CASP, and say, here, our requirements. Can you sit here and make sure that you comply with these things, rather than making our people suffer because of administrative things, not because of them? So establish your part of some sort. Can I have comments on that before I let you go? Let me start with you.
Thanks, Chairperson. The long and short of it was the business rescue practitioner brought litigation to compel the Minister of Public Enterprises to provide a response in relation to the Section 54 application. As you know, the mandatory timeline in the CFMA is that 30 days, which can however be extended on the basis of an agreement between the executive authority and the accounting authority of a particular SOC. But in this instance, the BRP, it would seem from what we are gathering and in the court papers, is that the decision was unduly delayed, and that was ventilated before court and judgment was reserved. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ulrich, Wendy.
So Chairperson, the Constitution requires that national and provincial governments allow capacitate municipalities to execute their functions and compels them to do it. So almost all national departments have some kind of support program that they provide to provinces and municipalities to help them execute functions. So in the case of the Department of Human Settlements, they have a national upgrading support program that helps provinces and municipalities on kind of, so municipalities that are on kind of city-based upgrading support programs. They all issue out a whole range of guidelines and toolkits that would help around the planning for these kind of things. So they do exist. And I suppose the question you're asking is, how effective are our capacity building programs and support programs that we have? I mean, the Department of Cooperative Governance, for example, has restructured the entire organizational structure for them to kind of be support focused as opposed to just kind of being the policy making setting of norms and standards department to do all of these things. So these programs do exist. They are budgeted for. We do ask for in departments' annual performance plans for them to kind of show us the outputs that exist for them to in how they then support provinces and municipalities. So it's not like they when we withhold money or when a department or a transferring officer withhold money that this is the kind of first step in what they do. There are these other mechanisms that then they also use in relation to how provinces and municipalities plan and how they deliver. So I'm hoping that kind of gives you some ease that they do exist and we do use them. And I suppose that one of the things we maybe have to come back with is what the sector departments is really on showing you how effective or how they really work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Ulrika. Maybe a key point is that on the national department's budgets, in a lot of cases, specific budget provision is made for the departments, the national departments, to oversee the conditional grant. So they've got a dedicated team supporting that conditional grant. and to provide not only support to the provinces and municipalities concerned, but also to monitor that the correct expenditure is taking place. So some of the tools they use is then the delay of transfers and the withholding and the like. But another mechanism, and that is something that I know a lot of the committees don't like that much, another tool that they use to look at expenditure and the Department of Water and Sanitation is a good example of that. There's, for example, a water conditional grant, and then it's got direct components, and it's also got indirect components. So the Department of Water and Sanitation will then assess which municipalities have got the capabilities to execute programs themselves, and that will be direct allocations, and in cases where the municipalities lack the capabilities, that's where they will then implement the programs on behalf of the municipalities concerned. And of course, over time, we would like to see more money going into the direct allocations and less money is going into the indirect allocations. MISA's also got a strong program in place where they're actually also focusing on, providing support to municipalities that lack the capabilities. So a lot has been done. And it's work in progress. And hopefully over time, we will see that things are improving. There's also nothing stopping municipalities if they follow due processes to bring in the capabilities required, contracting service providers to help them with the rollout, and for example, and the like. So there's definitely opportunities. With regard to Honourable Sheikh Iman's question with regard to municipalities and how they fund it, and whether more money must be injected into them, and the point that they've got own revenue capabilities. And one thing that National Treasury has definitely picked up through our monitoring systems is that there's great scope for municipalities to enhance their own revenue sources, even for the larger municipalities. So we do have a program in place to support municipalities to enhance their own revenue collection. One of the things that we're focusing on is to assist them with tariff setting so that all the true costs of providing that service is then captured in the tariff so that cost reflective tariffs are charged, for example. Another area where revenue optimization is quite important and it's a key concern of also the Department of Water and Sanitation is the level of water losses, for example. So if leaking pipes are addressed, the revenue can also be enhanced. Then the water won't go into the ground, but the water revenue will go into the municipal coffers. So there's definitely a lot of room for municipalities to enhance their own revenues, and that will also reduce their reliance on the fiscus. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wendy. Thank you so much, Team Treasury. Ulrich and Tato for the response to these last questions. But let me just thank all of you, Dr. Mampo and your team for the presentations and interacting with the committee. Thank you very much. You are excused, but you are also free to remain with the committee until we finish. Thank you. Let's go to the draft program for this term. Hello. No, I can't. Let's go to the draft program. Mashile, just flight it. Mashile, are you there?
Yes, I'm loading it here. I'm loading it here. Right. Che, can you see that, Che? Hello, Che.
Hello.
Hello. I think the chair is muted. We can see the presentation. Yes. Just try to hear the chair.
Yes.
Yeah, now I'm unmuted. Thanks, Honorable Matafa. Thanks, Mashile. Here is the, it was sent to us, honorable members. It's a short term indeed, finishing on the 19th of September. We've just disposed of the first item today, and next week we'll be dealing with the briefing by the Financial and Fiscal Commission on its submission on the 2024-25 Vision of Revenue, and then Wednesday, the briefing by DPME. You remember that we have always been saying that we want to interact DPME on government performance to date against the NDP and the seven priorities in the MTSF. That's what we'll be doing. And then come Tuesday, the 19th of September, you remember we've been interacting with SNTF, Public Works and Infrastructure, National Treasury, leadership on the progress made regarding the devolution of the infrastructure maintenance function of DPWI and SNDF. This is a follow-up to our oversight SNDF. So all members, that takes care of the remainder of the term. Can we live with this? Yes. Yes, all members.
Mlenzana, I move here that we take it.
Thank you.
Matafa supports chair.
Thank you. So we'll proceed on the basis of this program for the remainder of this term. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's go to the next agenda item, which is the adoption of the minutes of the 13th of June, 2023. The minutes were circulated. They take it to Reddit. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I so, chair.
Honorable Taiso moves. Thank you, Honorable Taiso. Seconder.
Humphrey Memezi second, sir.
Honorable Memezi seconds. Thank you, Honorable Memezi. The minutes are duly adopted. Thank you, Honorable members. Mashile, do you have any announcement, next agenda item? Do you have any other announcement?
Yes, Chair. We received an apology from Honorable Kwankwa. The apology came in after the commencement of the meeting. And the next one is about the next meeting, which is next Tuesday, where we're meeting the FFC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mashile. They take care.
Sorry, Chair.
Honorable Kwankwa.
Was it not recording my apology? He probably did not pick up that I'm in the meeting.
Yeah, he was recording your apology. You see, I think... You heard the host from the host itself, Mashile, that Honorable Kwankwa is in the meeting. Okay.
Thank you so much. I interacted with the personal assistant. Thank you so much, Honorable Kwankwa. It's recorded.
No problem, sir. No problem. I understand.
You're welcome.
Thank you. that takes care of that item. I think the last one from my side. Secretariat, I know it was your first day when you were holding the fort. Can we try and improve the way we manage our meeting? The muting and unmuting was a big problem today. Thank you. Let's try to improve on that one. In Zulu, inkonyani sathuka isisinga. Means we are new. Let's just make sure that we master that plan. Honorable members, let me thank all of you for participating in the meeting, our support staff, members of the media, everybody who's on the platform. Thank you very much for attending this meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable
Thanks for your endurance, Chairperson, when we're trying to get in.
No problem.
Sound like the ANC did long live the chair.
Come back home.
Viva, Kwankwa, viva.
Come back home.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, colleagues. Bye.